Hello, and welcome to episode number 69 of the Point of Convergence podcast. As always, I am your host, Exoacademian. Over the course of the history of this podcast, I have taken several opportunities to publish a special edition of the podcast where I answer audience questions in a feature I call the Inquiring Mind. This week's episode marks the occasion where I do this for a fourth time. Now, since the third edition of the Inquiring Mind feature, which launched several months ago, you could say a few things have changed. Perhaps the most significant change came recently when I posted an actual photo of myself to social media platforms like Twitter and Facebook. I followed that up this past week with my first two video interviews, first for James Iandoli's Engaging the Phenomenon podcast and YouTube channel, and then for Kelly Chase's The UFO Rabbit Hole YouTube channel. There are other interviews scheduled in the near future as well, which I will let people know about as they become available. Part of the interest that has arisen lately relates to an event I attended at the Monroe Institute back at the end of May, titled UFOs and the Consciousness Connection. Regular listeners to the podcast may recall that I discussed events from that multi-day retreat in episode 67, which was titled Human-Initiated Contact on Proactive Communication with Non-Human Intelligence. That event marked a new season in my history as a researcher of the UFO phenomenon and its intersection with other topics of interest, such as near-death experiences, out-of-body experiences, and psi phenomena like telepathy, psychokinesis, and precognition. This new season involves me doing actual field research, where I travel to various locations to join with others in actively exploring these various points of convergence. As it turns out, at the time of the launch of this podcast episode, I will be away for a second time doing active field research. The fruit of that experience I hope to report on in future episodes of this podcast. These new opportunities to connect with various players in this field, including both leading researchers and individuals Joseph Birx has deemed prime contactees, is yet another of the many profound opportunities that have arisen since I first started this podcast some 18 months ago. It goes without saying that I really had no idea then the many avenues this profound path of discovery would open up before me. Here's to that journey of adventure and fascination as it continues to manifest in each of our lives. But for now, without further ado, let's get back to the matter at hand, which has to do with me answering more of the thoughtful and thought-provoking questions that you, the audience, have sent in for this latest edition of the Inquiring Mind feature in this, the 69th episode of the Point of Convergence podcast. All right, let's jump right into the questions. The first question sent in is worded as follows. There are many theories about why cattle mutilations occur. Which theory do you personally lean towards and why? Thank you. Thank you for the question. Well, this is a controversial one, of course. Many people who look at the UFO phenomenon and want to see only love and light will look at this matter and be concerned, or perhaps explain it away as only a military exercise or something like that. I personally don't think that answer is sufficient. I think the cattle mutilation phenomenon has been happening for a very long time. There are stories going back hundreds of years. And in each of them, or many of them anyway, there is a high degree of precision. And this traces back from before we could actually do this. So while we could possibly do this now with our cutting edge technology, no pun intended, 200 years ago or something, we couldn't have done it to this degree of precision, the kind of precise incisions that are made before these carcasses are then left on the ground. So that to me suggests that this is technology beyond human. Or I suppose you could say if it's human, it would have to be time-traveling humans because the humans of the time, the conventional humans of society at the time, certainly couldn't do this. But outside of the human time-traveler possibility, I think it's very likely that some group of the UFO phenomenon is responsible. Now here I would just say, as I often offer as a disclaimer, while we conveniently refer to this as the UFO phenomenon, it is not one single thing. It is not one monolithic endeavor. I think that this phenomenon likely is composed of many, many different actors, likely arising from different origin sources altogether. And I don't think it's all love and light, nor do I think it's all demons and darkness. I think we have a vast array of different others here, and we see an across-the-board spectrum in terms of good, bad, mature, immature, etc., self-centered, or more communally oriented, and what have you. So what I'm getting at here is I would caution people towards not tending towards grouping everything in one category. Don't assume all of these others are our moral and technological superiors. Some may be, some may not be. Some may be our technological superiors, but not necessarily our moral superiors, and vice versa. So there really is an array here. There's a spectrum, and I think that's what the data actually shows. And where I think some people get confused is they look at the data and try to draw from it an agenda, a narrative around one group of others, which is difficult because it often looks contradictory. But I think the contradictions underlyingly arise from different patterns in the data that only become confusing and paradoxical largely when we try to draw from it one narrative, one agenda, one group of others. Now, as to why this one particular group would be interested in cattle, I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine there. I've heard different hypotheses, but really none stand out to me. Are they doing this as a part of some scientific expedition, the same way that we might cut up a frog like we did in science class? Perhaps. I don't know. The degree of precision certainly lends towards that kind of interpretation, for me anyway. It's not just this crass butchering that you might expect if it was just a pure act of cruelty. I would also add that there have been occasions where camera footage has shown suddenly cattle being there and suddenly not being there. And then at some later point, you might see just the carcass, the highly precision sliced up carcass. And this suggests they can actually manipulate space-time. Either that or they actually are just manipulating our camera equipment directly, even though we don't see evidence of that. What seems more likely is that they literally can freeze local space-time, as we've heard elsewhere in other narratives around this entire UFO phenomenon. And to us, it looks like something is just there and not there and then there again. We can't make sense of that, but as Jacques Vallée famously said, what the UFO phenomenon demonstrates is that we really don't understand space-time at all. And this is certainly the case with the cattle mutilation phenomenon. Again, thanks for the question. All right, on to our next question, which is worded as follows. What is your opinion on manifesting our reality via conscious practice and application? All right, thank you for that excellent question. Thought-provoking it is, and perhaps this arises partly because I've spoken about my tending towards an idea like idealism to explain reality, that that's a more powerful explanatory mechanism in my mind than something like physicalism. As I mentioned on this podcast and on recent interviews, when we look at things like the implications of quantum theory, and we look at the hard problem of consciousness and how the gray matter of our brain doesn't seem to be able to explain how consciousness arises at all. And then we look at phenomena such as psi, psychic capacities, telepathy, psychokinesis. And we look, of course, at the UFO phenomenon and all of the high strangeness and paranormality that seems baked into it. What that lends me towards is a notion like idealism to explain reality itself, that only a completely different model of reality that more resembles something like idealism would explain all of this, that physicalism fails time and time again. Even when you take the UFO phenomenon and high strangeness out of it altogether, I think the implications arising from quantum theory and the hard problem of consciousness itself, just those alone, make it clear that physicalism is not a tenable model. But does that mean that we can shape our reality through conscious intention, if it's really a dreamscape in a way? Well, here I think we have to distinguish between something called solipsism and idealism. Now, what is solipsism? The meaning of solipsism is a theory holding that the self can know nothing but its own modifications and that the self is the only existent thing. Said differently, quote, solipsism is sometimes expressed as the view that I am the only mind which exists, or my mental states are the only mental states, unquote. Now, it's interesting. Recently, when I mentioned that when we had the contact experience at Monroe, I felt like somehow we were connected to that other intelligence up there, whatever they are. And someone wondered if that meant that I was leaning towards solipsism, that that was just a reflection of my own consciousness. In other words, all that exists is what's in my mind. And I clarified that that's not what I meant. What I tend towards is something called idealism, which can be expressed as any of various systems of thought in which the objects of knowledge are held to be in some way dependent on the activity of mind. Now, the key point here is this doesn't mean human mind. It just means mind in general, mind at large, that you could say God's mind or the cosmic intelligence mind, but that everything ultimately that even appears physical to us is ultimately mind stuff. And here I would point to what I've learned through my lucid dreaming experiences, that in those experiences, everything feels just as physical in that state as our waking experience does. But of course, no one would say to me that it's actually physical. They would say my mind is generating all of that phenomena. Well, in the same way, what we're saying here is that idealism suggests that all of the physical world that we interact with, even when we fall and cut our leg, it's still ultimately a mind experience, and that the phenomena such as material, matter, is actually an epiphenomena of mind stuff, of mind at large. And very specifically, I lean towards a notion called analytic idealism, which was postulated by philosopher and computer scientist Bernardo Kastrup, who's been a major influence on me. And here's a quick snippet describing his overarching thesis. Quote, "This thesis articulates an analytic version of the ontology of idealism, according to which universal phenomenal consciousness is all there ultimately is, everything else in nature being reducible to patterns of excitation of this consciousness. The core idea of this thesis can be summarized thus. We, as well as all living organisms, are disassociated alters of universal phenomenal consciousness." Unquote. In other words, what he's saying here is that in the same way that someone with dissociated personality disorder can actually have multiple subjective experiences of the world within one mind, in the same way, Kastrup is suggesting that all of us are basically disassociations of the one universal mind, God's mind, or the mind of the cosmic intelligence, or the very mind of reality itself, because ultimately you could suggest from a non-dual perspective, all there is consciousness. And we, in each of our individual experiences as little eyes, little selves, are actually just little cells of this one overarching consciousness. And that partly explains, among other things, why we can have experiences with telepathy and whatnot and understand each other's thoughts, and how alien beings can perhaps interact with us and know our thoughts and sometimes seem to be inside our heads. Because ultimately, the boundaries between ourselves are porous, that we ultimately are part of the same bedrock of reality, which is ultimately composed of consciousness. This explains a lot the more and more you look into it and consider this as an overarching model of reality itself. With that preamble aside, let's get back to the central question. Can we, with conscious intention, change our reality? Or as this person put it, can we manifest our reality via conscious practice and application? What I would say here is, again, we want to focus on the difference between mind at large and our individual mind. We are still within this mind at large. That's why we all might look in a room and see the same objects in a room. They're not ultimately objects. It's still mind stuff, like we're sharing the same dreamscape, that we're meeting up in this one dream room. But it's the mind at large, consciousness, or the mind of God, that is manifesting all of that what we're seeing. And we have to remember that we're still one unit within that larger consciousness. So we can't just unilaterally change things. I'm sure you've tried this. There might be things you wish were different in your life, but just wishing it so doesn't make it so. That said, many of us have experienced synchronicity, where if we align with some larger sense of a move happening within consciousness, when we align ourselves with the flow of the river, where it feels like we are aligning ourselves with the intention of something larger than us, perhaps from mind at large or some larger ecosystem of minds, we find sometimes that reality seems to follow suit. I would say that's partly what synchronicity is, or that synchronicity is what it looks like to us when we experience this. Again, we are part of a larger consciousness field, and it is that which wills reality, you might say. And because we too are part of that larger stream of consciousness, we can learn to discern impulses that are arising from there, from the larger field, rather than from our own small ego, which in some ways acts more like a cancer cell in a body if and when it only cares about its own benefit, regardless of how that activity would affect the overall body of which it is a part. But once we learn to discern impulses arising from that larger stream of consciousness coming from mind at large, then when we try to manifest certain future realities, we often find that it does work. The reality moves before us in a way to make this happen. But the key is that it's because our motivation has arisen from that overarching stream of consciousness or mind at large. That's what I would say in general to that question, and I know that was quite the rabbit trail, but that's where I have to go to feel like I'm answering that question adequately. All right, on to our next question, which is worded as follows. How could / should one choose between modalities? If you wanted to make contact, example, heist, meditation-driven, / psychedelics, / astral travel, / CE5, is there a way of increasing the chances of the type of contact initiated or the type of entity being contacted? How could one guard against being given or taken in misleading messianic messages? I note Keel and to a lesser extent Valet, who highlight the propensity for tricksterish or absurd themes to creep into contact communications. There would appear to be very mixed results with regard to the long-term impact on those confessing to repeated contact. Okay, great question, and several aspects to it. First thing I would say here, the person in the question kind of distinguished Heist and CE5. I would say largely they are the same thing. They're basically identical protocols. The difference is really in name only, and relates to trying to distance the protocols themselves, which are employable by anyone, anywhere, without cost, from the cult of personality that is built up around someone like Stephen Greer specifically, because so much of CE5 is tainted in the public, for some people anyway, because of Stephen Greer's more recent actions. Heist has emerged as a conception put forward by Joseph Birx to offer a different name that we can gather around that at the end of the day is still about the same protocols, meditation-driven, intention-driven. It's about preparing ourselves and then reaching out to make proactive contact with a certain group of others. We are reaching out with our intention, which is positive, benevolent, to meet with others who also have a positive, benevolent, communal kind of thinking or being. That's what's key to Heist/CE5. Now, as I've mentioned on a couple of recent interviews, relating to your question about how we can control which ones we actually make contact with, I think the evidence suggests that Heist/CE5 results the vast majority of the time in having positive contact with benevolent entities. In other words, it's not like you're just picking up the phone and hitting speed dial, not knowing who you're going to get on the other end, or that you have the Wheel of Fortune and you're just spinning it and you might hit bankrupt and you might hit the jackpot. Rather, these protocols themselves and the intention we bring, the energy we bring, is like calling a certain number, which tends to be picked up on the other end by a certain group resonating at that same kind of frequency. Now, I know some people are going to resist that kind of language because it sounds too woo, it sounds too new age, but at the end of the day, reality is such that these vibrations, these frequencies, these resonant fields really do matter. They have much to do with what actually happens in our own lives, for instance. And I'm saying it's the same thing here. When we set a certain resonant field, then we tend to make contact with others that overlap with that resonant field. I think that's why CE5 and Heist so often result in positive encounters. And as I've said elsewhere, in the couple occasions where I'm aware of negative interactions arising because of these protocols, I think there were mitigating circumstances. And by that, I'm not just guessing. I know about specific cases where there were other issues going on coming into those events, and I think those other issues ended up impacting the nature of the protocols themselves. So in other words, you weren't really dialing that number because of the energy that was actually brought. So you have to look beyond that superficial level. Now, getting to some of the other protocols or the other means of contact. Now, when we think about psychedelics, Terence McKenna famously said, psychedelics are a guaranteed way to have a supranormal experience. And some of those experiences include making contact with seemingly alien or non-human intelligence. With psilocybin, the encounter is more with something that feels like it's otherworldly, some overarching sense of interacting with something else, whether it's a deeper sense of you, your future self, a more overarching self that we're not usually in contact with, or if you're actually contacting some alien intelligence, I don't know. It may be that the spores themselves represent a gateway to contact with another kind of an intelligence. And as I mentioned, I think on a liminal frames episode, that would make sense. If you want to seed the universe with the possibility to make contact, then spores would be a great way to do it, because you could spread it around the universe on meteors and whatnot. And then when the local indigenous population evolved to the point where they actually consumed those spores that had become mushrooms and whatnot at that point, then that would facilitate an interaction with this intelligence that had been spread across the cosmos that was pre-existing. That might be what's going on with psilocybin. Now, with DMT, it's very common to make contact with beings such as those described as the machine elves, especially once you're at a sufficiently high dose. This is almost a guaranteed means of contact, but of course it's also illegal in many places. That will eventually change, of course, but take that into consideration. Now, another option is astral travel. This is also a known means of communication and contact as well as a great way to experience yourself outside of your physical body, outside the constraints of the executive ego. But I will say the cases I'm most familiar with involved people who had already been contacted by alien others. For instance, I covered a case several episodes ago, going back several months now, where someone actually made contact via astral projection. But to be clear, that individual had already had interaction with alien others. The Greys and whatnot had originally contacted him, abducted he and his son, actually. Later, he was able to reach out and contact them through astral travel, but that happened afterwards. So I'm not saying it's not possible to do this as an initiatory kind of experience. I've even had one of my own one time. But it's less clear and it's not as much of a well-worn path as some of these other protocols. But nevertheless, I highly recommend this practice for the expansion of your own consciousness. Now, in regards to the second part of the question, how could one guard against being given or taking in misleading, example, messianic messages? I would say there, very basically, you would judge by the fruit. In other words, if you feel like the information that's been given actually leads to positive outcomes, then take it more seriously. If it feels like negative outcomes are the result, then don't take it seriously or question the motives of the intelligences that supposedly gave you the information. Are there other agendas in play, for instance? And if you sometimes have a bit of both and, like the trickster phenomena that John Keel so famously wrote about, well, then just chalk it up to possibly being interacting with some sort of trickster whose ultimate aims we do not seem to be able to discern. If there are any aims of a specific nature at all, sometimes it just seems to frustrate us, although some would argue even there that the overarching purpose of the trickster is arising from something like the collective unconscious to try to get us to change the nature of the way we see reality itself, that it's deliberately confounding our attempts to understand and to make headway because we are somehow missing something, and that this arises from the collective unconscious to set us on the right course, even though it's frustrating in the short term. All right, on to the next question, which is worded as follows. It seems that over time you've been granted access or come across footage and or information that perhaps goes beyond what the general public has seen. If that's the case, what's the craziest, most startling, or most compelling footage you've seen pertaining to the UFO phenomenon? Thank you for the question. Well, as it turns out, there are a few video clips and or photos that I've seen that do fit this bill, I would say. The first one that comes to mind, which I saw earlier this year, was footage of what appears to be what we commonly refer to as a light being. This is a being that basically looks humanoid, but is lit up like a light bulb, basically. And what's fascinating with this particular footage I saw, which was shot down in Patagonia region in South America, is that this particular light being was shot from across a lake from a boat, and it was in broad daylight. And this light being appeared to be walking through the edge of a forest off of the shore of this lake, and the footage was shot from this boat. So it was quite fascinating because, again, often when we think of light beings, we think about UFOs and entities people see at night against this stark, dark background. This was in broad daylight. And even in broad daylight, you could see this thing lit up like a bulb, this humanoid creature being walking through the forest from the perspective of this boat that was going along the lake. So that was really, really fascinating and shocking footage, honestly, that I had not seen anything the like before. The second bit of footage that comes to mind was taken in a similar location in South America, and it involves what is clearly a UFO, a craft, and this footage is actually taken at night. And what's fascinating is that this stationary craft hovering above the ground, taken from the perspective of a security camera, actually seems to change shape. You can see it literally change shape live on the footage, and then it shoots up into the sky, so you basically have what's called instantaneous acceleration at that point. I don't know how to explain that through prosaic means. Again, you have something that's stationary, it's not blurry, it's not the greatest footage, it's not crystal clear HD footage, it's from a security camera. Nevertheless, it's very clearly an object above the ground that changes shape and then shoots up into the sky instantaneously. So that also is footage that was very, very compelling. The third bit of footage that comes to mind that is also compelling, equally so, equally startling, was of a craft that was moving against a mountain range. I'm not going to say where it was because, again, this is not public yet, but it was a mountain range somewhere in North America, I'll say that. And this craft was moving in front of this mountain range, so not that high off the ground, maybe 100, 200 feet off the ground, moving in front of this mountain range in broad daylight. Again, I would say this is not night footage, and it's pretty high quality footage. And you can see this craft or object or whatever it is moving strangely, and it definitely seems solid. It doesn't look like it's just some trick of light. It looks like a solid object that's moving strangely in front of this mountain range. And what's most startling is that it then proceeds to fly straight into the mountain. And when I say into the mountain, you one second you see it there, and the next second you don't. It seems to disappear into the mountain. You don't see any kind of impact. There's no smoke. There's no collision. No signs of collision. It just seems to disappear straight into the mountain. Of course, that's very, very fascinating, very, very startling. And we, of course, have nothing prosaic that would explain that. And here I'd bring up the notion of trans-medium vehicles, which we've heard about. Now, often when we think of trans-medium vehicles, we think of vehicles that can fly into space, perhaps, and then into our atmosphere, but then also can go into our oceans. And we're amazed when these craft can, at high speeds, fly straight into the ocean and seemingly not leave any wake. They just seem to go straight into the water and not even leave a splash sometimes. And then they often are spotted or actually filmed or cataloged moving through the water at basically supersonic speeds, which, again, we can't do. But transmedium doesn't stop there. It also means that some of these objects, some of these vehicles, can fly straight into solid objects. So perhaps they're phasing into some other form of matter at that point. Or perhaps, again, they're doing something with space-time that we just don't understand at all. Again, from an idealistic point of view, getting back to that metaphysical conception of reality, matter isn't ultimately real. So what they're maybe doing there is manipulating the consciousness stuff that's necessary to manipulate in order to do what appears to us like a physical object flying straight into a large physical structure like a mountain and do so seamlessly. Of course, we know gray aliens and all sorts of other types, reptilians and whatnot, can walk straight through walls and they can take people straight through walls. So again, we already know that this kind of movement through solid objects is a breeze for some of these others. So we shouldn't therefore be surprised that that's also the case for the craft. But it was quite a thing for me to see this footage where you see it happen in broad daylight. A craft flies straight into a mountain and it's gone. All right, we have time for one final question, which is worded as follows. Hi, EXO. I'm curious what your perspective is on MyLab/military alien cooperation and the hybridization program. To me, this sometimes sounds like science fiction, or is there some validity? What are your thoughts? Okay, well, I'd begin by saying, initially, I probably agreed with you. I used to look at this more like a science fiction kind of notion. It seemed like a stretch to me that there could be this kind of military alien cooperation going on and us not know about it. It just seemed like too big an operation to fly under the radar. In fact, that's often the argument that people would put forward for any kind of large-scale cover-up over time, because it's just very hard to keep things that are secret for very long. And the more people that are involved, the harder it is to do. And often government is actually not all that efficient, and these secrets become difficult to keep. Also, when people used to talk about MyLabs more as just a military operation, like a PSYOP, where they're basically faking an alien abduction and then doing other things to human beings, while I think that possibly and probably has happened, I didn't think it could be at the same level as an actual alien abduction and wouldn't confuse that many people. So even if the kinds that it's a military operation faking an alien abduction in order to do something else to people, I think that would be a small portion of the totality. In other words, that would be a very small portion of the entire collection of abduction stories we know exist in the literature, left, right, and center. So in other words, I wouldn't want people to just dismiss the entire thing as some rogue operations done by some military types and that the abduction phenomenon doesn't exist. The abduction phenomenon does exist, and it is being done by some alien others, even though my contention would be that these are not the same alien others, for instance, that we contact through protocols such as HICE or CE5. That's again where I see different distinct patterns in the data. And so for me, it looks like two different groups. But beyond that, I'd have to say that more recently, I've come across information that suggests that MyLabs really is real. It really does happen. And not just as some small rogue element of the military, but that there actually is a cooperative program being run by some elements of our military and alien groups involving both Greys and reptilians and what have you. This really does seem to be going on. There's actually data-driven evidence, I think, that supports this. And part of this is also the hybridization program. So while I used to look at that part as kind of science fiction, I've seen evidence more recently suggesting that this really is happening, as shocking as that is. Although again, I caution people not to group that in as all one activity, all one agenda of some overarching alien agenda. I think there's different groups. Even the Greys are likely represented by multiple different groups and may even be a kind of way that certain alien beings, maybe even interdimensional beings, manifest in our reality. They could be wearing the Grey facade as a kind of suit, or that may be just the way that they manifest when they come into our dense 3D world from whatever interdimensional locale they're coming from. And one final note to add on this particular topic is that I do believe the hybridization program is absolutely real. I do believe there are hybrids walking amongst us, and I do believe the technology is sophisticated enough that these people would be indistinguishable from anyone else, even if they were given a complex biological exam by a doctor, for instance. But nevertheless, I've seen evidence that for me makes clear that this is definitely real and it's actually happening right underneath our noses. But that said, it's not necessarily nefarious or malevolent. I think like many of these matters, it's more complex than that. And this is where I would differ from, for instance, the work of Dr. David Jacobs and his conclusions on these matters. And on that note, we've come to the close of another edition of the Point of Convergence podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast, you can do so by going to patreon.com/exoacademian. But until next time, friends, from deep within the Blue Ridge Mountains of North Carolina, this is Exoacademian, signing out.